Welcome to the Michael Rivera What Really Happened radio show.
Aloha, welcome to the show, and again, this is a live show, we're not pre-recorded, so grab those phones, get that dialing finger warmed up, dialing, talk about an anachronism, what's a dial? There's nothing on this phone but buttons. Get that button finger fired up and call 800-259-9231, 800-259-9231. We have a lot of stuff to talk about, and obviously, let's get some of the basics out of the way. The Dow took a major tank today. Ending that two-day rally. Now, yesterday's jump really went up high, and the conventional wisdom is this was supposed to be linked to Obama's commitment to rebuilding America's infrastructure. And like I said, it sounds good. We know the roads are crap. We know the levees are leaking. We know the bridges are in need of inspection and repair. But where is Barack Obama going to get all of this huge money? Nobody's going to loan us any more money. Obama raises taxes on Americans. That's going to increase the bankruptcy and foreclosure problem. If they just print up more dollars to hand out there, that's going to collapse the dollar. Frankly, the only thing which is going to get our economy going again is to cut taxes 50% across the board so that we Americans can keep more of our money and pay our mortgages and pay our credit card bills and pay all of this stuff off that has accumulated. This is the one thing the government could do to help, and it's the one thing the government won't do. Is admit that by being a smaller government, the economy is going to heal. And, you know, it's a big, huge problem because all the other two solutions, gosh darned if we do and gosh darned if we don't. And, yes, the Federal Reserve needs to go. They're a big, big part of the problem. They are the problem. You know, we got away from a fixed monetary policy. Okay, want to jump over here to the Blagojevich, and if I mispronounce it, I apologize, story, because this is shaping up to be a huge manufactured political scandal. Now, this morning, federal agents arrested Blagojevich and his chief of staff at their homes, supposedly for trying to sell Obama's U.S. Senate seat. When Obama becomes the president, there's going to be a vacant Senate seat. And, apparently the idea is that they caught him on tape talking about possibly soliciting some kind of campaign donation or kickback in exchange for who got that seat. And here's kind of the problem I'm having with this story. Blagojevich didn't actually do it. He didn't actually make a deal. He just talked about it. Now, we all sometimes talk about things that, hey, I'm going to go down and I'm going to show that jerk what, you know, for leaving his lawnmower parked in my driveway. And you know, we'll make statements all the time. You know, we're not living yet in a country where people get thrown in jail for simply saying something. We'll all say things out of bravado or whatever. And mind you, I'm not making excuses for Blagojevich, and I know that Chicago has an historical reputation for political corruption. Okay? So I'm not making excuses. But the reason I bring this up is because they're making a big to-do over some recorded bragging. They haven't actually got him committing a crime. He hasn't done anything. It's like pre-crime. Out of Minority Report. They're going to arrest him before he can commit the crime he's thinking about or talking about. I mean, if they were going to do that, they would have to throw pretty much every divorced person in the country in jail. Because when you're going through a divorce, sooner or later, you're going to say, I'm going to kill that darned attorney or whoever. And everybody goes through that. And if they were going to throw people in jail for just saying, I'm going to do X, Y, Z, you know, we've got the highest incarcerated percentage of our population of any industrialized country. This would really put it right through the roof. So, I'm not making excuses for Blagojevich, but here's the situation. 24 hours ago, Blagojevich made a declaration that the state of Illinois was going to suspend all business with the Bank of America until Bank of America was willing to renegotiate credit arrangements with the Republic windows and doors plant. This is the factory where the workers were given like 3 days' notice to say, you know, get out, we're shutting you down, it's all going to go away, and could have kept working if the line of credit was extended. Now, a lot of people are very supportive of the workers because, you know, from workers comes the wealth. If we dump on the workers, if we beat up on the workers, we'll never get our economy back. You can't make an economy happen by taking a bunch of paper money and shaking it back and forth and hoping that it grows. It doesn't. At some point, somebody has to pick up a tool and some raw materials and make something that somebody else wants to buy. That's what these people were doing, the Republic Windows and Doors plant. So, Blagojevich said yesterday, we're not going to do business with the Bank of America until they are willing to help our domestic factory and the workers continue on and do what they're going to do. And then 24 hours later, oh, man, the refuse hits the ventilation system for sure. And if this rings a bell, it should, because remember a guy by the name of Elliot Spitzer? And this is the guy over in New York who sued Countrywide Mortgage Company for predatory lending practices, for misrepresentation and the claims they were making to people to get them to take out these mortgages. Who owns Countrywide? Bank of America. So now we're seeing a pattern here. I mean, Elliot Spitzer goes and says, we've got to stop this subprime mortgage disaster before it turns into a total meltdown. He was sounding the warning, and people were starting to listen. And then all of a sudden, this Emperor's Club VIP scandal blows up. And it's a big to-do, and the media just takes him to town and drives him right out of office. Okay? Folks, in every single town in the United States, there is a club where girls take their clothes off and dance around for men. Okay? That is just a fact of life. We even have clubs where men take their clothes off and women look at them, okay? Talk about equality. And all of a sudden, this was a big, huge scandal, and it drove Elliot Spitzer from office. And now it looks like Blagojevich is going to be driven from office. What is the common factor? They went up against the banking machinery that dominates our country. And we are already seeing indications across the blogosphere of websites that have Bank of America or one of its subsidiaries as advertisers. They're deleting the posts that link these two incidents together because it is just a little bit too obvious. And especially when you get back to the fact that Blagojevich has been arrested for a tape recording of something he says he might want to do. He hasn't actually committed a crime. And the mainstream media is already trying to explain, well, it was about to go public, so they had to arrest him even though they don't really have a case. They're not interested in arresting a case. They're interested in getting him out of power because he went up against the banking industry. And that was the real problem. All right, we got to take a break here. We're going to take a few deep breaths, listen to some words from our sponsors, the ones that we do have, that we have not annoyed and angered and totally teed off at this particular point. So call in 800-259-9231, 800-259-9231. We will be right back.
Share the gift from above, the power of love, so that everything is Christmas.
This is Cascadia Public Radio.
The Michael Rivero What Really Happened radio program. Call Mike now at 800-259-9231. 800-259-9231.
And aloha, America. Welcome back to the show here. And I want to take a minute to talk here. I can't believe this thing is still hanging around with us. This issue over Obama's citizenship. And it is amazing. I mean, the birthers, that's what we're calling them now, the birthers, they keep changing their claims about what's going on. This is a forgery. That's counterfeit. The Republican governor of Hawaii is helping a Democratic candidate pull one over on the American people. the United States Supreme Court basically came down and said they were not going to hear the appeal on the D'Onofrio lawsuit. And I'm a little disappointed. I wanted them to take the case just so that it would have its day in court, as it were. They basically look at the facts, say, okay, this is where it is. The lower court was correct in saying you don't really have a case here. And then move on, and that would be the end of it. And unfortunately, with the Supreme Court refusing to hear it, we're never going to be rid of this. The birthers are going to be out there saying, it's a cover-up, it's a cover-up, it's this, it's that. And I'm concerned because Keith Olbermann is absolutely correct about something. This whole Obama's natural citizenship issue, it's making the radical right and the blogs who've fallen for it look really silly. I mean, they have created this situation that is tailor-made for the corporate mainstream American media to ridicule all alternative media. They're waving this at, oh, look what those silly internet people are believing this week, you know, and it is amazing. And I'm almost wondering if that isn't at least part of the agenda for why this thing is going on. And the only reason I am bringing it up again yet today is because WorldNet Daily is launching a campaign to bombard the electors with letters and petitions from Americans saying you can't vote for Barack Obama, he hasn't proven he's a citizen, and on and on and on. And they've got it backwards because we don't live under a Napoleonic code. If the people who think that Barack Obama has in any way lied about his eligibility, the burden of proof is on them. They have to come up with documentation or whatever to prove their accusation. We do not work on a system here of just making allegations in public and then demanding the target constantly prove their innocence. That's not the way we work here. That was the way that worked in Napoleonic France, which is one of the reasons they got rid of Napoleon. So the burden of proof is on the accusers, the ones accusing Barack Obama of having pulled off this incredible fraud. Now, I am convinced, and first of all, let me back up here a little bit. D'Onofrio himself, the one whose case is currently before, or was before, the United States Supreme Court, he now agrees and stipulates that Barack Obama was, in fact, born here in Hawaii on the island of Oahu, and that his mother was an American citizen. Well, read the citizenship laws. That's it right there. Barack Obama is a natural-born American citizen. D'Onofrio's entire case is saying that because Barack Obama's father was a British subject, that this makes Barack Obama a dual citizen and therefore ineligible for the presidency. Well, I'm sorry. There is no comment in the Constitution about dual citizenships. And Barack Obama, of course, had no real choice in the matter at the time of his birth. And when he was able to execute a choice, did in fact allow his British dual citizenship to lapse. So it's a very, very weak point because D'Onofrio is basing this entire suggestion about a dual citizenship and a British subject being ineligible for the presidency on the requirement that somebody has to be a natural-born citizen or was an American citizen at the time the Constitution was adopted. And his interpretation is that that qualifier was put in there because most of the people who founded this country were British citizens. And so they had to give themselves a means for them to become part of the government they had just created. Well, D'Onofrio was reading it wrong. The reason that additional qualifier in there is very, very simple. The country hadn't existed when the founding fathers were born. So there was no way that there were any natural-born citizens or going to be any natural-born citizens for 30 years after the country started. So that was the reason for that qualifier to be put in there. And it's got nothing to do with the fact that the founding fathers were British or in some cases French citizens before the country came into existence. So it really is a load of nonsense. So why is this still being flogged? Why is WorldNet Daily trying to put pressure on the electors? And by the way, they're sending them all this mail to their home addresses. This could be construed as an implied threat. We know where you live. This could be a violation of the USA Patriot Act, this kind of coercive psychological pressure to try and influence what is essentially a political process that is defined as terror under the USA Patriot Act. So, why are they doing this? Do they really think the electors are going to basically vote in McCain or Hillary or Mickey Mouse or Joe Farah? If they want to vote me in, they can, but I digress. What is the real agenda here? Just to try and undermine Barack Obama's moral legitimacy? Are we really a nation of so many racists who just can't bear to have a non-white executive in the Oval Office? Is it just a bunch of sore losers who wanted the neocon reign to continue? Is it really the Israel firsters who are upset that Barack Obama may not be so ready to sign those endless series of blank checks to Israel's war machine? Or, and this is what I'm concerned about, are we being set up for an incident where somehow Barack Obama is blocked from being the president or is removed from office, triggering riots and a national emergency? We're going to go to the phones. We've got Doug in Florida. Doug, what's on your mind?
How you doing, Mike?
I'm doing fine.
I'm just calling in regards to the whole Obama eligibility thing. Right. I don't know if this has come across your desk yet or not. It's something that somebody threw in front of me a couple of days ago. Article 2, Section 1, Clause 5 of the Constitution states, no
yes.
person except a natural-born citizen or a citizen of the United States at the time of the adoption of this Constitution shall be eligible mm-hmm. to the office of president. Neither shall any person be eligible to that office who shall not have attained the age of 35 years and been 14 years a resident within the United States. I can only yeah. interpret that statement one way, that you had to have been born at the time of the adoption of the Constitution. So if this
No.
Right, how can you find any other way
go
to
go back
read
and
that?
Reread that again. You know, that would be silly for the Founding Fathers to write that in there because it means the country would come to an end after about 70, 80 years.
Well,
because we wouldn't
have
leaders.
Interpret it. It says that Zachary
I'm sorry, but that's kind of silly. Thank you for the phone call. We got to take a commercial break here. You can only be president if you were born when the Constitution. Okay. Obviously, we're getting to a great deal of silliness. We're going to take another break here. We'll be back after these words from our sponsors.
Thank you for listening to GCN. Be sure to visit GCNlive.com today.
Listening to the Genesis Communications Network. And now, set your eyes on the future and let's consider what really happened.
And aloha, America. Welcome back to the show. We're going to go to the phones. We've got Dave in California. Aloha, Dave. Welcome to the show. What's on your mind?
Hi, Mike. Well, I got to tell you, man, I think you went way over the top on this one. Invoking the Patriot Act and also impugning somebody's, you know, in general. I'm not saying you're impugning anybody, completely, but to impugn or to infer that someone might be racist because Obama got in there, I think is going too far. And I think that's part of the thing that really angers folks about the whole Obama thing. You know, if you disagree with them, in some cases, and some people have the opinion that it's automatically racism, that makes it pretty hard to carry on a reasonable conversation with folks. You know what I mean?
Well, no, I understand what you're saying here, and I offered it merely as one of several possibilities.
Right.
Because it seems that, once you accept the fact that the birthers keep changing their arguments in the case, it becomes obvious that they're not proceeding from a position of any kind of factual information about the citizenship. They're thrashing around and looking for something to justify their position of saying Barack Obama is not eligible to be president. So,
right.
It's really they're starting out with the goal of disqualifying him and then looking for an excuse to do so. And so there's got to be a motive for that.
Okay, well, let me can I just give you my opinion on it?
Okay, sure.
Okay, I don't claim to have all the facts on it. I've just been listening mm-hmm. to the different arguments that have been made about it, mostly from the side, the point of view of, if there's a question about the authenticity of the certificate, which there seems to be, I don't know. I haven't seen the darn thing, but I haven't seen him produce it in a higher court. Maybe he has. But why not just do it? I mean, it's like if the president works for us, if you're hiring somebody or you're a corporation, a lot of places want to see your birth certificate. You have to show your birth certificate, the real one, to get a passport. So what's the big deal? Why doesn't he just show it, get it over with, and then everybody can have a good laugh about it? What's the point of
Well, see, here's
out?
The point. He showed the birth certificate. Then the birthers came out and said it's not real because it doesn't have the embossing. So they released a new photograph of it in a raking light. You know, the first time they just scanned it on a computer scanner.
Okay.
Then they released a photo of it in a raking light that showed that it did have the proper embossing. Then
okay.
The birthers come back and say, well, we've checked and we believe it's Photoshop. They don't provide any proof for it. It's just an accusation. Then when it comes back and people have physically examined the document and said, yeah, it appears to be genuine, and the state of Hawaii says, yes, it's genuine, then they
okay.
come back and they say, well, the state of Hawaii, the governor, is doing the cover-up. And like
that.
I said,
yeah.
now D'Onofrio is admitting that Barack Obama was born in Hawaii of an American mother.
Who's D'Onofrio?
Say again?
Who is
He's
D'Onofrio?
The guy who's law... He's the gentleman who brought the... Okay. D'Onofrio is the gentleman who brought this lawsuit, I think, originally against the state of New Jersey, saying that the state electors could not vote for Barack Obama until these questions about his eligibility were answered.
Okay.
The case went to court. They basically said, there's nothing here, and he took it to the Supreme Court. The Supreme Court basically has said they don't want to bother with it. They don't think there's anything there that they need to look at.
Okay.
And that's where the matter rests right now. But even D'Onofrio has said that Barack was born here in Hawaii. So the point is, they keep changing the facts and accusations, which says they're not coming from a point of any factual basis for their claims. They've got an agenda to disqualify Barack Obama. They're just trying to find an excuse to do so.
Okay, well, I'm totally unfamiliar with this D'Onofrio thing. I've been listening to Phil Berg and listening to the way the case is going from his point of view. I mean, I know there's two different factions in this that have a disagreement, so... I mean, it's...
Well, there's about six different lawsuits, I think.
Oh, six, okay. Anyway,
yeah, there's
so,
six of
know,
them out there now.
If it was me, I would just hope that we can be dead sure. I mean, one way or the other. Just, I don't know how he can do that. Produce the real document in court, whatever it takes to do it. Just
how
so
do
that
you
I know
he
that
hasn't
in 4 years,
the real document.
We won't have to worry about
how do you
Arnold
know he hasn't
there?
Produced the real document? That's one of the accusations that are coming out there. The state of Hawaii says it's the real document.
Okay, well...
And, you know, the stuff is out there, and there's no hard proof that there's anything out of the ordinary here.
Well,
We've got to let you go.
We'll
get another caller. Yeah, real quick.
I want to tell you, I appreciate that you can look at... are you still there?
Yeah, I'm still here.
Oh, okay.
And you're still on the air.
I appreciate that you're an expert with the visual image, and so I would tend to take your word for it when you say that you've seen it, the embossing and all that is accurate. So, you know... I'm still holding my...
Well, I put the picture up on my website. Okay. We're going to let you go here because we've got another caller waiting on the line, so thank you very much, Dave. But I've put the photo up on my website along with the scans of the birth announcements in the Honolulu Advertiser and the Star Bulletin. And again, not that I expect anybody to take my word about anything, but at the church where my wife is the choir director, there's a lady whose younger sister was born at the same hospital the same day, and they saw the Obama family there. So we've got an actual eyewitness here, which is why I'm convinced there's really nothing there. And as I said, the point is they keep changing the arguments and claims. And that means that they're not being driven by any kind of a factual basis. It's like if you say, oh, Joe killed the bartender. That's your factual basis to go after Joe. But if you're just going to say, I'm going to get Joe somehow, and he's a litterer, and he stutters, and he wets his bed, and he does this, and he does that, then you're betraying the fact that the agenda is to get Joe, not necessarily to deal with a real criminal act. We're going to go back to the phones. We've got Henry in Oregon. Aloha, Henry. Welcome to the show.
Hey, aloha, Mike. Hey, first, I enjoy your website. I think I'm addicted to it.
Terrible thing.
I know, that's a terrible thing. Hey, anyways, I wanted to bring kind of a new site. I was hoping to bring a new site to this. I never called a radio show before, and I'm finding myself a little nervous. Excuse me. But in either case...
And just take a few deep breaths. You're going to be wonderful. Trust me.
Oh, yes. Okay. I brought a new insight to this, because sometimes I think I'm better to think about things, you know, a little bit different. I kind of sometimes put my place in put myself right into where the founding fathers were actually writing and their stuff and doing what they're doing, the day they live and that type of stuff. And there's sometimes to me, I sit here and I go, if I went to them and I said, well, they're worried because this guy was born one day earlier in a different country, they'd put their head in their hands and go, you don't get the point, do you? You know, you just don't get the point. You haven't taught you nothing. This is what this is about. This is about if they're born here, and especially if their parents were here, this is what I think they were thinking. And so they're born, okay, and the dad goes out and works on the farm. The mom's doing the food for the winter, doing all her canning, and breastfeeding her baby, and doing this odd kind of stuff to make the kid strong, okay? Then he gets a little older, 3-4 years old, and the dad starts talking to him about, oh, back in 1776 and the Constitution. Then he goes to school like at 5 years old, and then that's the first thing they start doing, the 1776, and they don't do that in America anymore. And the Constitution, this is what, and the child finds a love for his country. And he that's what this is about to me. It is not about one day being born, or even a week, or even 2 months. If he was born in a country for 2 months and then brought here, I don't think that's the point. And so I wanted to bring that to you. One last thing is, then you've got also the 0 to 10 years is for a lot of psychiatrists. A lot of people say, not that I trust psychiatrists, but I believe it. Is they're so impressionable at that time. They learn more. Some say 0 to 6, some say 10. It's all questionable. But that's where they get most of their, you know, who they are. Would you agree with that?
Oh, yeah, the core beliefs. That's why they round them up and they put them in kindergarten and they put them in Bible study school and Sunday school to just get those beliefs just crammed into them as fast as they can at that age.
Exactly. And I know, Nancy, the church thing's a little bit different. Sorry about what they've done with the churches, but still, I don't know. I kind of look, if you look at Little House on the Prairie, I know it's at the movie, but they go in and you see them go in and they talk about the Constitution, 1776. And I think that's what more of the founding fathers' spirit was in this, not the day they were born necessarily, but how they were raised. So I would probably bring up more issues if I was to look at a presidential candidate, what the years were from 0 to 10. And I think I got my point across, and thank you very much for taking my call.
All right. Well, Henry, thank you very much for calling, and you do bring up a good point. And when we come back from this next set of commercials, I do have a response to that. So please stay tuned, and we'll be right back.
Can we talk?
Can we talk?
Can we talk about gun control?
Gun control?
Seems like it should work, doesn't it?
It should work.
You'd think so. Yeah.
Pass the right laws.
Pass the right laws.
And you can disarm the criminals.
You disarm them.
That's the idea.
But the problem is...
The problem?
Criminals don't obey the law.
They don't obey the law.
That's true.
After all, they're criminals.
They're criminals.
Criminals. They'll always find a way to get guns.
No matter how many laws you pass.
Which means
they still have guns.
They still have guns. While the rest of us...
The rest of us?
The rest of us are just left defenseless.
Welcome to What Really Happened Radio. Visit us online at whatreallyhappened.com. And now, set your eyes on the future and let's consider what really happened.
And aloha, America. Welcome back to the last segment of our show today. And I wanted to follow up with what we were talking about with Henry, who called us from Oregon today. You need to look at the Constitution of the United States in the context of the history of the times, and in particular the history that the founding fathers were keenly aware of. Because when they came over to the North American continent, they said, we're going to start a whole new country. What the revolution was about was a resistance to Great Britain's efforts to make North America another Britain, with the same privileges for the wealthy and the royals and the same oppressions for the common people. So when the revolution succeeded in driving the British from the land, the founding fathers got together and they said, okay, what are the mistakes that we need to avoid? What are the things that we don't want to have our new country doing? How do we learn from what went wrong in Europe? And one of the things that they were keenly aware of was the long history of European nations, which because of invasions and marriage and this and that, were constantly being ruled by people who had never even been born in that country. Marie Antoinette, Queen of France, actually from Austria. And they were aware, the founding fathers were aware, that having a ruler in charge of a country who was not from that country, who was from another country, there was going to be some divided loyalties. They were keenly aware of the quote from the Bible, no man or woman can serve two masters. And they were aware that very often monarchs that originated from a foreign country very often would rule their lands to the benefit of that original country. So that was the reason the native-born provision was put into the Constitution. And that was a very radical, indeed, that was a revolutionary concept right then and there, because that was not standard practice in Europe at the time. Europe, well, you had French ruling England, and or England ruling France, and Austrians ruling this, and it was just all over the place. It was this one royal family. Everybody was cousin to cousin. You know, the Queen of England was a cousin of the Tsar of Russia, and it was just that one little group of elevated families that were interrelated by marriage, and they ruled it all. And, you know, that's what they wanted to avoid here in the United States. So I'm, you know, that's the reason for that natural born provision in the Constitution. We will have rulers over our country that are from this country, and their first allegiance will be to this country. That's the reason for that qualifier to be there. And yes, the first 10 years of your life is when a lot of your core values are instilled in you, a lot of your core beliefs. And we're bribed to accept beliefs as a dominant mode of our thought processes. You know, believe in Santa Claus, you get presents. Believe in the Easter rabbit, you get candy. Believe in the Tooth Fairy, and you get money. And on and on and on and on. And it's a conditioning process. You will get goodies if you allow beliefs to control your thinking. And so those beliefs installed in you when you're young really do control your life. It takes a tremendous effort of will to get away from those. And that is another reason why we want natural-born leaders here in this country. Unfortunately, doesn't stop them from being corrupt or criminals. But, you know, hopefully we'll avoid some of those foreign entanglements that George Washington warned us about. Now, speaking of foreign entanglements, another thing in the news right now are the riots in Greece. They've been going on for 3 or 4 days. The official story is these are in response to police shooting a young person under very inappropriate circumstances. But, you know, when the entire country explodes, there's something else going on. And it reminds me very much of the situation in Romania when Ceausescu fell, where a riot at a sporting event turned into this spontaneous political explosion. And 2 weeks later, Ceausescu was machine gunned to death on Romanian national television. We could actually see the government of Greece fall to the riots, to the rioters. And it may just simply be that the people of Greece are as fed up with their government as the people in Iceland or the people in Thailand or indeed the people here in the United States. We might see a cascade of these popular revolts and uprisings just spreading across the world as people realize just, you know, how badly they've been used by all these, you know, fiat monetary systems and so forth and so on. Now, getting over to Pakistan, we're continuing to see indications that Pakistan is in the crosshairs for a new war. We had a U.S. congressman come out today and say Pakistan is a failed country, which is Diplo speak for, well, they're not really a country, therefore it's okay for us to go in and invade them and put a real country in there. One, of course, that's amenable to U.S. interests. And right now the U.S. interests within Pakistan appear to be to cut China off from Middle Eastern oil, or at least make them purchase it through U.S. agents sitting on those pipelines. And a little side note, there was an interesting story about, article about gun control written by Ron Paul that hit the net today, and I have it posted at whatreallyhappened.com, and he points out something a lot of people have failed to notice. Why the Mumbai attackers were just able to go on this incredible killing spree without being stopped? It's because India has strict gun control. Nobody's allowed to have guns except the police, and as we heard from witnesses at the train station, the police were not shooting back at the attackers. So they just you know, ran rampant. There was nobody there in a position to stop them early on. It's just something to keep in mind, you know, when Barack Obama's saying, oh, you don't need to buy any more guns. Heck, yes, we do. And the fact that you're telling us not to buy any more guns is a really good reason to go out and stock up. Now, obviously, the last story we're going to cover on today, just when the Bush administration is about to end and its historical legacy is pretty much in tatters, five of the tortured detainees at Guantanamo are now saying that, yes, they will confess to planning 9/11. They will confess to blowing up Challenger. They will confess to destroying Columbia, putting that iceberg in the way of the Titanic, striking a match to the Hindenburg, assassinating President Abraham Lincoln and John F. Kennedy, and murdering Cain. It actually was Abel. Cain slew Abel. But you get my point. You know, it's just incredibly convenient that just when the Bush administration is getting ready to leave and is no longer going to be able to reshape world events to its own view, you know, we have these five men who've been tortured for who knows how long and how much, and all of a sudden they're going to confess to everything to validate the Bush administration's view of what happened on 9/11. I don't think anybody's going to believe it. It's very obviously a manufactured bunch of tortured patsies. And they'll get up there in front of the camera and say, yes, yes, I did it all. Turn off the voltage. And we're supposed to just accept and believe that, oh, yeah, this one tortured confession is going to completely erase all of the hard evidence we have of cover-up and deception and lies coming from the Bush administration. It's almost pathetic that they think it's going to work. It's insulting. It's insulting that they think we, the American people, are dumb enough to fall for this. What a very low regard the U.S. government has for we, the people. Another story, you know, somebody's trying to keep up the booga booga factor because apparently suspicious letters containing white powdery substances have shown up addressed to governors in at least six states. The powders tested so far are all harmless. It is assumed that there are more letters en route to other governors and that somebody is carrying out this campaign to get all the governors spooked and ready to see terrorists. And it's either a nasty prank or somebody is sort of priming the public relations pump for an event yet to happen to kick us off into the next war against Pakistan or Iran or whoever else it is that they want to invade this week. Okay, so up in Canada, I think we mentioned this before, the Governor General has agreed to suspend Parliament. So I'm kind of wondering when the Canadians are going to start pounding on the gates of their parliament and their government buildings and start demanding action there. Okay, that's the end of our show today. We'll be back tomorrow, Wednesday, with another show, more phone calls, more news. Until then, stay safe, be well, and aloha, America.
Welcome to the Michael Rivera What Really Happened Radio Show.
And aloha, America. Welcome to the show here. It is Wednesday. It is hump day, halfway through the week. Heading down to Powhatan Friday. And boy, I got to tell you, I am angry today. And I hope you will be as angry as I am when I explain why. And if you want to join us on the air and vent and shout, we are live and online in real time. The phone number is 800-259-9231, 800-259-9231. Donovan is answering the phones and flogging the giant mutant hamster that we have living behind the mixer board, running the little wire wheel to power all this radio-type stuff here. Now, we all know after an election there is supposed to be a period of a political honeymoon. Well, I got to tell you, the honeymoon is over. We didn't even get to the hotel. We didn't get to the suite. We didn't even get the condom out of the wrapper. And this political honeymoon is all over right now, and it is part of the fallout from this Blagojevich scandal. Whatever reason this was kicked off, was it because Blagojevich angered Bank of America 2 days ago? It is having a lot of blowback. It is going in a lot of directions here. And the one that has really got me upset, it relates to Barack Obama, who, according to two sources, did in fact meet with Blagojevich shortly after his election victory to discuss the succession of his Senate seat. David Axelrod was quoted in a magazine interview just last month saying that they had met. And there was also a report out of TV station KHQA also reporting that Obama met with Blagojevich to discuss the Senate seat. Now, all of a sudden, with Blagojevich under arrest and possible indictment, Axelrod has issued a statement retracting his current comment and saying, no, they never met, that former statement is no longer operative, or whatever the correct jargon is for saying, I changed my mind. And if you go to the KHQA story, which is linked at whatreallyhappened.com, now all of a sudden you're getting content unavailable at the other end. So the story has been yanked at the far end. So we're not even in the White House yet, and we have lies and cover-ups and manipulation of the media. Change my astrolabe. I got to tell you right now, I'm just absolutely disgusted. That, you know, we're not even getting a chance to catch our breath before we're back into the cover-ups and the deception and corruption. And it's just amazing. And I'm still of the opinion McCain would have been just as bad or worse. And I really wanted Ron Paul. But I got to tell you, for all the talk about change you can believe in, wrong. Barack Obama is just more of the same. I'm thinking about that song they used to have on the Kodak commercials. I see your true colors shining through. That's absolutely true in this case here. Now, regardless of its original agenda, because apparently the FBI has been on this investigation for quite some time. The timing yesterday following the dissing of Bank of America was very suspicious. Whatever its actual agenda for going public at this time, it is having a huge blowback. It is cutting a wide swath across political figures. There are allegations that Jesse Jackson Jr. was the candidate number 5 who proffered a $500,000 bribe in exchange for that Senate seat. And Jesse Jackson has come out with a statement saying no, that he's been told by the FBI he's not a target, he's not under indictment. And he's cooperating fully, and he's hired a lawyer, and so forth and so on. But it's just blowing in all directions, and looks to basically uncork a huge amount of corruption and scandal, which is not a surprise for Chicago. Meanwhile, of course, Democratic defenders are coming back and reminding the GOP that they should not be throwing stones because of all the pedophiles living in the GOP glass houses. So the mud is just flying in both directions. The stink is overpowering here. And it's just this, incredible, incredible mess. And at the heart of it, we have this meeting between Barack Obama and Blagojevich, which is now being denied. And obviously the question is, why? Because Barack Obama was the senator. He is leaving his seat to go to the White House. To me, it would make sense that they would have a meeting. Since Blagojevich gets to name the successor, I am sure that Barack Obama would want some input on that, and I don't think it would be inappropriate as long as a signed check was not involved. So I'm kind of having to wonder why. Why all of a sudden Barack Obama is so intent on severing this connection to Blagojevich? It's not like he's campaigning and this is going to harm him in the polls. You know, why this early blow his credibility trying to cover up this meeting? Because as of right now, the presumption that Barack Obama is telling us the truth every time he steps up to that microphone, that is now gone for good. He's not even in office, and he's hosed his own credibility. So, and it doesn't make sense, because I would have bought there was a legitimate reason for these two to have a meeting over the Senate seat. So already, my suspicious antenna are up and saying, okay, something else is going on here. Now, I do want to make a comment here, and that is about the absolute media saturation that we are getting with this story. It is everywhere. All the news shows, it's just, this is the big scandal, and it's juicy, and they're waving it around, and yes, we're going to do all the damage that we can with it back and forth. But I am reminded of a similar scandal in the early months of 2001, and that was Gary Condit and Chandra Levy. And it started out with the allegations that they were having an affair, and then all of a sudden Chandra Levy disappeared, and she was gone. And it was this big, you know, where did she go? Was she murdered? And, for like months, we had cameras following Gary Condit all the way around. They were doing live aerial coverage of him crossing the street and, you know, play-by-play commentary. Is he staying inside the crosswalk lines? I don't know, Dave. Let's check the instant replay. And they were just going on and on about this. And then we found out after the fact that it was during this same period of time that the United States government was informing other countries of their intentions to invade Afghanistan in October of 2001. All the foreign press had it. Jane's Defense was reporting the U.S. was going to invade Afghanistan. BBC was reporting the United States was going to invade Afghanistan. The only people who weren't getting that news were the Americans, we the people. We were getting all Gary Condit all the time. And since then, we've evolved a term of craft, being conditized, which is the media is going to focus on this one juicy little scandal to hold your attention because something may be going on somewhere else. And they don't want you going out to your Google and finding out, something's going on in another part of the world that may make it look like we're being set up for yet another 9/11. And another deception, another false flag. You know, we're seeing all these little mails filled with harmless, so far, white powder being sent to at least 8 governors, including Sarah Palin. We're being sensitized to terror again. We're being pre-sold, pre-spun. Now we're being told that the Pakistanis who were behind the Mumbai attack, which is now treated as a given, even though there's reason to doubt that snap rush to judgment, but it's being treated as a given, and now we're getting stories that these Pakistanis are training American jihadis. So we're being sold this idea that there are now jihadists inside the United States ready to do whatever they're going to do. And it just feels, you know, in the months before 9/11, starting, I think, end of July, first part of August, our media started running all these stories about Osama bin Laden. And it was constant, Osama this, Osama that, Osama that. And I remember noticing and commenting at the time, Osama hadn't actually done anything to warrant news coverage. It was just another story about what a terrible, terrible human being he was. And I remember writing both at my website, and I think I was still posting occasionally to Free Republic, and I said, it feels like we're being pre-sold, that this is a bad guy, that something is about to happen that he is going to be part of supposedly. And we're being prepared to accept that this is the supervillain. And, of course, then 9/11 happened, and the pattern began to make sense. So, yes, Blagojevich was wrong to solicit a bribe for the Senate seat. On the other hand, you know, given by how wide-ranging the scandal seems to be, it sounds like it's business as usual. So why the big blow-up? Unless are we being distracted for something else? We need to find out. We'll be back after these words from our sponsors, 800-259-9231. 800-259-9231. We'll be right back.
Thank you for listening to GCN. Be sure to visit GCNlive.com today.
Michael Rivero, What Really Happened radio program. Call Mike now at 800-259-9231. 800-259-9231.
And aloha, America. Welcome back to the show here. And before we move on, I just have one more comment about this Blagojevich situation. The nature of his arrest. They call him at home. The agent says, "Hi, I'm from the FBI. We're coming to arrest you. There are 2 agents downstairs. Would you mind joining us down on the portico?" And Blagojevich goes down, and they say, "Hi, we're from the FBI. We're here to take you in," and they take him in. And I'm thinking, this isn't normal FBI. You know, where are the flashbang grenades through the windows? Where's the front door being battered down? you know, how come the family dog wasn't being shot and the wife and children being terrorized with guns in their face? It does seem to be that maybe the FBI is a little more gentle around the political elites than they are around those of us whose taxes pay their salaries. I wonder why that is. Anyway, moving right along, obviously the economy continues to be a major part of everybody's concern right now. And when we talk about conditizing the American people and distracting them, one of the things that we may be being distracted from right now is the Federal Reserve has gone to Congress to ask permission to issue their own debt instruments directly, not tied to the Treasury bonds. Now, aside from cutting out the middlemen, you know, this basically frees the Federal Reserve from any governmental control from the Treasury Department whatsoever. And it also means that they are free from any debt load restrictions. They can sell Federal Reserve bonds or whatever they're going to call them. Maybe they'll call them Fed bonds or something like that, or Fed bills. But they can sell as many as they feel they can get away with, because there's no limit. There's no control imposed by Congress. It's completely stepping aside. And it's a reminder, we are dealing with a private bank here. So they're going to be selling their own debt instruments, and this allows them to go on loaning more and more money into the U.S. economy, which means Congress, the executive branch, are no longer in control of the economy. The Federal Reserve will be, because they're going to be issuing this money whenever they feel like it, or selling these debt instruments and turning it into cash. And basically, it's a usurpation of the constitutional role of management of the monetary supply, which is what the Federal Reserve is all about. Because if you go back to the original Constitution and the Founding Fathers, the Treasury Department had direct control over the United States money supply. And it was a supply of money that was based on something of worth. In this case, silver, silver coinage. The paper money was a claim check. You could take that claim check anytime you wanted, go to the bank and get that amount's worth of actual silver coin in your hands under your own control. With the passage of the Federal Reserve Act in 1913, monetary control was transferred to the Federal Reserve, which issued paper money that was not backed by anything. In fact, every bit of that paper money represents a loan to the U.S. government at interest in order that there be money in circulation. And here's the thing about it. If we paid off all of our debts to the Federal Reserve, there would be no money left in the country. We can't have money in our country unless we are in debt to the Federal Reserve. That is the monster mechanism. And now the Federal Reserve gets to just put out as much of that debt as they feel is necessary to float themselves along. And I think this is a very, very dangerous situation. And probably this is one of the things that is not being reported very much in the rush to keep Blagojevich in front of everybody's minds and eyes right now. On that same issue, of course, we are finding out that California is basically out of money. It's supposed to be like the eighth largest economy on earth by itself, and it will be, or the government will be, broke by next March. And I want to take us all back a few years to the special recall election, when Arnold Schwarzenegger decided he was going to try and replace Governor Gray Davis. This was right after the whole Enron scandal had California for some $8 billion. And it wasn't realized that it was really Enron. Gray Davis took the heat for it, and Schwarzenegger campaigned against him. And he had this little comment to make.
Now, there's another way you can tell you're Republican. Your faith in free enterprise, faith in the resourcefulness of the American people, and faith in the U.S. economy. And to those critics who are so pessimistic about our economy, I say, don't be economic girly man.
Well, I'm sorry, Governor Schwarzenegger, the governator, but the Republicans wrecked the economy, and as it turns out, the girly men were absolutely right, and you should have been listening to them. And while we're at it, you might want to rethink the fate of Proposition 8, because that was another big mistake that California has made lately. So everybody is scrambling for money, and it really is a case of the strong taking from the weak. There's not going to be much justice about any of this right now. Now, a little bit of number. We're going to play some numbers. Ooh, magic numbers. It turns out the federal government overspent itself by $164.4 billion just in the month of November. Now, at that rate, that comes to almost a $2 trillion budget deficit in a single year. It was only a couple of weeks ago people were saying, oh, Obama may have a $1 trillion deficit his first year in office because of the economic woes. Folks, we've gone past that. We've already gone past that. The Bush administration is spending $164 billion more every month than they actually have coming in. And it's just flowing out the door. And nobody knows where it's going. The bottom line is, I don't think they know how to fix it. I think they're looting the nation and heading for the lifeboats. They finally got the auto bailout put through. I'm hearing two different numbers. From some sources, they're saying it was $14 billion. Other sources saying it was $15 billion, and tucked inside the bill was a pay raise for judges. And this is another classic case of Congress, never taking care of the issues at hand without shoving a few little things inside to get them passed. And I know that's business as usual in Washington, D.C., but that's why we get so many really bad laws passed. They get tacked onto bills that everybody knows are going to pass, and they get shoved right through. Now, things are not much better in Great Britain. As a matter of fact, according to the latest credit rating services, McDonald's restaurants have a better credit rating than the nation of Great Britain. And not that British cooking has ever been all that great, but I mean, you know, McDonald's, Big Macs, and they're a better credit risk than the nation of Great Britain. So that basically tells you how bad things are really getting. Britain, of course, has enough money to put TV cameras all over the place. They now estimate there is one TV camera for every six British subjects. And with that kind of overlap, you have to ask the question, where are you not going to be under a TV camera? I remember when Romania had their revolution. It's good on the Romanians, I might add. And one of the reasons they said it was justified was Ceausescu had put TV cameras on every street corner to watch his people. We're there. We're doing the same thing. Maybe time for a revolution here. We're going to take a break. We'll be back after these words from our sponsors.
Are you tired of searching for Freak Talk Radio? Well, search no more. We are the GCN Radio Network.
You're listening to the Genesis Communications Network. And now, set your eyes on the future and let's consider what really happened.
And aloha, America. Welcome back to the show here. We are hearing that Greece is now in its fourth night of rioting. There are reports that there are fires burning in Athens. And obviously I'm concerned. I think we are all concerned not only about the lives and health and safety of the Grecian population, but obviously the cultural heritage that's at risk there. I think at this point we can safely assume that the story that this is all the result of a police shooting may in fact not be entirely accurate, that while the shooting may have provided the spark, that obviously 4 days of rioting like this betrays a great deal of unhappiness by the Grecian people with their government. We are continuing to hear reports that there are calls for the government to step down. The government might actually be toppled and a whole new government put in. And it does seem like this is a trend going around the world. We had the people in Iceland who were rioting, then it was in Thailand, now it's in Greece. And, you know, hey, if you're going to have a global society and a global economy, when it goes bad, it's going to go bad everywhere. And that seems to be what's happening. And I'm in agreement with Citicorp on this issue. I think we will see that sort of thing happening in this country in the not very distant future. It's just looking for a flashpoint. It's looking for a spark. And I think there's a lot of anger out there. I see it in the emails that I get sent to whatreallyhappened.com. I hear it in many of the phone calls I get in the show. I see it just in the road rage that's around us when we're driving on the street. Just talking to people. And any pretense of support for the U.S. government is just gone. Everybody's just saying, oh, yeah, the government did 9/11. You know, I think at this point we can say safely that the blogosphere and the alternative media, we've succeeded in winning the war for the minds of America, because our points of view regarding 9/11 and various other issues are now the majority opinion in the population. And now we're in that uncomfortable period where everybody has to process through what they're thinking and decide what they're going to do about it. Getting back to the news here, about 3,000 transportation workers who applied for their new Homeland Security Department-sponsored identification card, otherwise known as the Transportation Worker Identification Credential, or TWIC, have run into a major problem. These are the government-mandated ID cards that are used in ports, airports, shipping ports, bus terminals, train depots. It's a standardized ID card. And apparently these 3,000 workers had their information for their application for the card taken using training systems, which did not actually retain the data. And so when they got their cards and they went out to go to work, the little security systems would not allow them through. And so they can't go to work. And worse, there's no quick fix. They have to start this whole application security process all over again. And it's just an example of how all these security systems they're putting in, they're not tested, they're not debugged, they're as messed up as the voting machines. They're not going to protect us from terrorists. They just make our lives more inconvenient and more controlled. And it's just, you know, it's nonsense, because anybody with the resources of a nation state is going to be able to get right past these things. So, it's one of these things that sounds good in theory and when they're getting their funding, but it just, in the real world, it doesn't work out. Speaking of real world not working out, and then we're going to get into some science here. About a week ago, Apple Computer issued a security warning advising owners of Macintosh computers that they should seriously consider purchasing and installing antivirus software on their computers. This, of course, was a huge blow to their ad campaigns, which stress that Macintoshes are relatively virus-free compared to Windows machines, the implication being that Macintosh is more secure. This is actually not the case. The reason Macintoshes have not been getting very many viruses is the virus writers prefer the Windows machines simply because there are more of them. It's a target-rich environment. Hackers generally don't write viruses for the little machines to the side that only have a small market penetration, because they don't get the huge rate of return that they do going through the Windows machines. And anybody who thinks that Macintosh is proof against worms and viruses does not know their history of computers, because long before there was Windows, there was Unix. And Unix was where the very first worms and viruses and hacks and so forth were taking place. And Macintosh, of course, is based on Linux, which is a derivative of Unix, and a very good one. Let's give credit where credit is due. And the Macs are a very good machine, but they're not automatically more secure. In fact, in one case, I got a virus through a file transferred from a Macintosh. So, anyway, my antivirus caught it. It came in and flagged it and said, whoa, it's coming from Macintosh, and you got a virus on there. Apple has withdrawn the security warning because of complaints from their marketing and advertising departments. And I think this betrays a very bad attitude, because Macintosh would rather have their users go on imagining a false sense of security rather than lose this little advertising edge that they've enjoyed over the Windows machines. But the bottom line is, as Macs grow in popularity and people are buying more and more of them, it is becoming an attractive target for worm and virus writers, simply because the worm and virus writers know that most Mac users don't bother with antivirus and firewall products. The machines are actually much more wide open than Windows machines. And they're going to start taking advantage of that. And I think this was very inappropriate for Apple to put out the warning in the first place and then quietly rescind it because of advertising and marketing concerns. Okay, we're going to turn here to a subject which is near and dear to my heart. Actually, no, it isn't. I'm tired of hearing about it, but we're going to go over it one more time, and that is global warming. Apparently, earlier today, Barack Obama, following a sermon by St. Al of the Gore, came out and said that he is committed to doing everything in his power to curb human-caused global warming. As a side note, as he was saying this, it was snowing in Austin, Texas. And here's the bottom line. The evidence that global warming is, first of all, not unusual for the Earth, and second of all, is being caused by other factors other than human beings, is becoming overwhelming. And the global warming cult has been caught with a number of embarrassing revelations. We did one on this show about 3 months ago where we had an expert who'd surveyed the sighting of the temperature sensors being used by the global warming promoters and found that they were being put in the outflow of building air conditioners. One of them was located next to a trash incinerator. Gee, I wonder why they're getting warmer numbers off of this data. And, of course, everyone makes a big deal about this IPCC summary for policymakers. They were meeting in April 2007. They basically, this is the core of the group that says, yes, global warming is real. We must tax the people and control their lives to save the planet. Basically, there's 52 scientists who are part of this IPCC. Every one of them is funded to the hilt to find evidence in support of human-caused global warming. You know, the golden rule of science. Whoever has the gold makes the science. And, you know, we've been seeing this, but now we have over 650 scientists, 12 times as many as are in the IPCC, who have basically come out and said the global warming is really, human factors are a minor factor in this. Solar radiation controls is the primary dominant factor of Earth's temperature. We have a sun that's been very, very quiet for a very long time, and we're looking at a very, very cold winter. And the data just doesn't support it. And, of course, it doesn't help when the IPCC used October's temperature data to claim that November was the warmest on record. Embarrassments like that. We're going to take a break for some commercials. 800-259-9231. 800-259-9231. We'll be right back.
Radio. Welcome to What Really Happened Radio. Visit us online at whatreallyhappened.com. And now, set your eyes on the future and let's consider what really happened.
And aloha, America. Welcome back to the show. Final segment of our show today. And just for your information, we will be live tomorrow and Friday and Saturday. And we're not going to have any pre-records this week because my day job is kind of a little bit more under control. So, you know, I realize you're not calling today. I don't know why. You're out there. But we will be live for the next 3 days. So, you know, tune in, no more pre-records, and we'll be having a lot of fun. Now, I want to wrap up on this global warming thing here because what this is a scam. This is a scam. The way government perpetuates itself, okay, you know, once you're fed and you've got a roof over your head and you're comfortable, how does government justify doing more and taking more from you? Well, it has to create a crisis. There has to be an enemy, whether it's terrorism or a war on drugs or a war on poverty or a war on the lint that collects underneath the sofa or whatever. They create an emergency, and then they sell you the solution to it. And what we've got with the global warming cult is we have this idea that climate change is somehow wrong and bad and evil and that you are to blame for it. And that only you can atone by giving them lots of money and obedience. And we had a story that, again, was on whatreallyhappened.com, where Europe has already been engaging in this carbon tax, carbon credit system. And it's made a lot of people very, very rich who are buying and selling these carbon tax credits. But as of yet, there's been absolutely no impact on the environment because the money from the carbon taxes is being spent to make up for shortfalls in other areas. When they talk about, oh, we could solve the problem with the carbon tax and all the rest of it, they never say how they're going to use the money to somehow ameliorate the damage they claim is being made. That's just sort of left off there. But the European Union is looking at this and saying, yeah, it's made a lot of money for key players in it, which includes Al Gore and his carbon tax brokerage. But it's not really doing anything of any significance to the environment itself. So the way the scam works is really very simple. They take something that happens naturally, which is the climate changing, and if you go back and you look at the geological and paleontological history of the Earth, it's always changing. It's always getting warmer, or it's always getting cooler, usually in about 100,000-year cycles, which corresponds with the Earth's orbit oscillating between an ellipse and a circle around the sun. And they spin this that this is a crisis. You know, and they say, the Earth is getting warmer and faster than any other time in its history. Well, I'm sorry, but accurate temperature measurement has only really been possible for the last 100 years or so. They don't know how fast it was getting warm or cold during the end of the last Great Ice Age, which was 20,000 years ago. There's no way to tell if it happened over a period of 100 years or if it happened across a period of just 2 months. There's no way to tell. There's no way to gauge that accurately. We know over long periods of time, obviously, it did get warmer. We know it's been far warmer in the past on Earth than it is here now. And it's been a lot colder as well. As the ice sheet on Greenland started to melt, which it stopped doing that, it's starting getting thicker again this year. But while it was melting, they started to see signs of human habitation, proving that at one point within human history, Greenland was occupied when it was warmer. So this stuff goes on all the time. The Earth is always getting warmer or colder. But no, no, no. Al Gore and the cultists are going to say, no, the Earth must be this temperature, and if it's getting warmer, by golly, that's a problem, and you must pay for it. And it basically means, you know, giving them more money, because there's never enough money to keep a government happy, and giving them your obedience as they tell you that you must drive smaller cars, and you must live in smaller homes, and you must use less electricity, because that is always the overriding agenda of all governments. Make the people make do with less, because government must have more. And boy, I tell you, if you ever want an education about the true nature of life in the United States, government versus the private sector, get involved with a military contractor at some point. I mean, the difference in spending, I mean, like you and I and small businessmen across America, money for us is like the kitchen tap. Turn it on a little bit, it comes out. Those military boys, it's like they got fire hoses. It's just, it's a completely different reality of military and government spending, the way the money just goes, like there's no tomorrow. And in this case, there might not be. But it's basically, they're creating a crisis out of something that happens naturally, and they're trying to sell you the cure to it. And if that doesn't work, they'll come up with something else. The Earth's magnetic field is fading. We must fix it, or cosmic rays will kill us. And then they'll start taxing us to put magnets in the ground or some such nonsense. It's called the Hegelian dialectic. Look it up on your favorite internet search engine. And governments perpetuate themselves by creating the enemies that we must all unite behind the leader to fight. Hitler did it with the Poles at Gliwice. George Bush did it with the Muslims with 9/11. It is the oldest trick in the book to tell your people, oh, they are coming to get you. You must give me your financial support and do what I tell you, or they are going to harm you. And it is the standard stock formula snake oil that politicians are going to use to control you, to trick you out of your money. Worse, to trick you out of the lives of your children. To go get Saddam's nuclear bombs. Oh, there weren't any. Gah, is our face red. Okay, we got a caller on the line. We've got David from New York. Aloha, David. Welcome to the show. What's on your mind?
Evening. I just wanted to mention with this logic of carbon taxes and greenhouse gases and such, if you really think about it, what is a greenhouse? And what kind of gases do we add to a greenhouse when we say we're cloning a plant? carbon dioxide. What they're basically telling you is the stuff that's beneficial to the planet is what's dangerous. And it's right out there in obvious logic for anybody to understand. So it really blows my mind that people could fall for it.
Yeah, absolutely. Plants love carbon dioxide. They'll take it in. They'll make more oxygen with it. There's already studies to indicate that increased carbon dioxide increases crop yields, which on a planet that is already struggling with famine in many areas, that should be a good thing. But Al Gore can't get your money by saying, yes, go on breathing out and exhaling because it's good for the earth. They needed a villain. They can't blame water vapor on people. They can't blame methane on people, even though those are worse greenhouse gases. But CO2, yes, that's human caused. Therefore, that is the villain, and that's what you've got to pay your tax credits on. But you're absolutely right. Carbon dioxide stimulates plant growth.
Remember what
Mount
St. Helens put out, right?
Yeah, we've got a volcano down here on the next island off to the southeast there. And, you know, that puts out more stuff in a day than all the cars on the North American continent do in a month. And it'll sting your eyes and everything. Yeah, and but you're absolutely correct. Carbon dioxide is not the automatic villain. I mean, if we did not have greenhouse gases in the atmosphere, there would be no planet at all.
All right, appreciate your time. Have a good evening.
Thank you, and thank you very much for the call and, you know, your insight. Okay, we're almost to the end of the show, and I wanted to get this one last story in here, and I'm so glad. George Bush has now come out and said, well, you know, the Bible might not actually be literally true, and that he doesn't see an incompatibility between the story of Jesus and the fact that the scientific evidence indicates that there was evolution, and that the earth is really considerably older than 6,000 years, and that all this other scientific stuff is true, and the earth doesn't stand still and rest on pillars and all the rest of it. And, yes, it's a validation for those of us who view the Bible as at best a metaphorical collection of folk tales and mythologies. But this is the guy who was telling everybody that God told him to go attack Iraq. So it's a bit of a... it's a bit of a shock for him to come out and say, well, you know, the Bible isn't literally true. And you know what's really scary? For once in the last 8 years, George Bush has said something I agree with. And that really worries the heck out of me. All right, down to the end here. Real fast comment. Now that the Allied troops, mostly the U.S. troops and the British troops, are starting to pull out of portions of Iraq, archaeologists are finding that the U.S. military has just absolutely pulverized Iraq's cultural heritage. You've got these pieces of ancient palaces ground up and put in sandbags for bulletproof shelters. It's a crime against knowledge and history. We'll be back tomorrow, same time, same channel, same news, same phone calls. Until then, aloha, America.